What if the way we move could unlock liberation and authenticity? In this episode, I speak with Jazz Flynn, a movement artist and choreographer, about how they use dance to help people reconnect with their bodies and discover their true voices. Jazz shares their journey from childhood dance studios, like Dance Moms, to finding their own style, breaking traditional rules, and creating movement workshops that celebrate freedom and self-expression. They also reflect on coordinating dance tours across Asia with their supportive partner and how movement can be a pathway to liberation for everyone. So please welcome Jazlyn. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. So I'm a graphic designer, and I think I've been trying to figure out like what the industry means to me and basically how my work fits into corporate America, if it does, if it doesn't. One of the reasons why I started the podcast, The Pool Party, was because I got laid off from an AI startup in 2023. And the only reason why I really took that job was because I needed a job. And prior to that, I had taken 2 years off of work. So I was like, okay, I need to work. But before that, I was working at a social media agency based in LA. It was very girly pop, like lots of LA girlies doing social for celebrities. That was awesome to land that job during the pandemic, but there were also a lot of things during that year 2020 where I was always like tied to my phone. There were times where I was like, oh my gosh, it's 9 p.m. and I would really love to go to my yoga class. So I burned out really fast and I felt like maybe some shame, but ultimately realized like something had to change for me. But that's my story, and I'm having you on the podcast because you're an artist, you're someone who's really multifaceted, and I would love for you to introduce yourself. Obviously, the way we know each other is because I rented out your room this summer, and I loved it, and I also love all the books you have.
Yeah, Marlon told me you were reading some of my books, which I love. I think that's, I love, like, lending people books, and I love digging through people's bookshelves.
Yeah, you have a great canon there. I was like, oh, okay, we're like... This is like art and praxis. Mm. Yeah, lots of good stuff in there.
Yeah, my name is Jazlyn. I am a movement artist, choreographer, dancer, choreographer. So kind of like working in different angles of movement and the body. Mm-hmm. And I think that ultimately my work is around unlearning the sort of socialized choreographies and the oppressive choreographies that we internalize as human beings, but also as non-white, non-straight bodies, so that we can bring our authentic voice out of our bodies. And I feel like this, I love working with non-dancers, and I facilitate movement workshops with people who are not trained dancers, because I really believe that our bodies are instruments and technologies that are available to all of us. And it's so important to connect with that and connect with the fact that there's no right or wrong way to move. And I think in my own choreography, I'm like a trained dancer. I've trained since I was 3 years old, but a lot of that was really oppressive for me. And so I kind of went through a process of, yeah, like growing up in a sort of like dance studio competition environment. Not too far off from Dance Moms, if you've seen Dance Moms. I loved dancing, and at the time I didn't know, because when you're growing up as a kid, you don't know, like, what, that's just, like, the normal. That's, like, that was my entire dance world, and that was dance for me. But it was difficult. I didn't necessarily super thrive in that environment. I never imagined that I could even become a professional dancer, because that just wasn't even in my world of possibilities. I didn't think I was good enough. And in college, I kind of took a break from so much dancing. That's not true. I kind of just like pivoted to like more of like the hip hop dance world, and also started just like formulating my own style, I think, and like breaking rules, breaking ballet rules, and finding my voice, and still wasn't pursuing it professionally. And after like a year or two after I graduated college, and I was like still doing internships, I had studied communication studies. And so I was kind of like doing internships in the world of like entertainment industry. And the office life is just not for me at all.
It's not for me either. Did you study out in California? Where did you go to school?
I went to UCLA.
Okay, awesome. I'm curious, what was that like?
Totally different self. I think like I always defined my life between like before I was like 21, 22,
Yeah.
and then after, because during UCLA, it felt like an extension of my high school, which was like I went to high school in like Asian American suburbs of Southern California, like the east side of SUV. And yeah, I was like super just like hardworking star student, valedictorian, a million extracurricular activities, never had any free time. And then when I went to UCLA, it was like similar. It was an extension of that because I just like didn't break that rhythm for myself. And I would just like take classes, work, intern, and then I was on this hip hop dance team. And back then it was really intense. Like we would practice from like 8 p.m. to like 5 a.m. sometimes
Wow.
in the parking lots. Like we
Yeah.
didn't even have studios.
I feel like UCLA dance teams must be just like another level of elite.
Don't know if elite is the right word. I
Yeah.
think it was just like the time of like what they called the dance community in
Yeah.
like California of these like hip hop competitions of like mostly Asian American dancers because they the scene kind of like originated from Asian American cultural clubs in like the UTs in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like how all those like teams were formed. And then I think the sort of like collegiate dance competition scene was really popping off like in like 2013, 2014, 2015, which is like when I was doing that.
I remember being a teenager on the internet in 2014 and just living on YouTube in my free time, like watching dance compilations of people like on dance teams. So you touched upon like a lot of things, like being an Asian American kid, like with lots of like extracurricular activities. Maybe dance was like one of those, and then going to a UCLA. Yeah, and I feel like, one thing I've been kind of reflecting on in my own like Asian American experience sometimes is like, okay, well, there's like model minority myth, and then also like maybe, like trying to be like a good student and achieve and like maximize time. But I also kind of feel like as I've gotten older and I've kind of been working more, there's this like other flavor of like working and living in the US that sometimes kind of feels like you pick a career and it's like almost like a big box store or like a pyramid scheme like type of template. So it's like you choose a flavor of something and then you get like really good at it, but it's like one thing. It's kind of mechanized. So you talked about kind of like breaking, maybe I didn't say these exact words, but like mechanized like choreography. But I'm wondering if you
Sorry,
could
what did you say? What word before
mechanized,
choreography?
or is that what you said?
Mechanized.
Yeah, it's just like choreography of like our bodies. And I think that's something that's like kind of interesting too, because I've been thinking about like programming, the ways I'm programmed, maybe some of the programming my parents gave me. My dad was in the military for a while, and that's like something he says a lot, where like he's programmed or he really wants to like live life in like these kind of algorithmic ways. Yeah, but those are just a few tangents of thought that kind of came up as you were speaking. Yeah.
Yeah, I during 2020 pandemic, I started hosting this movement workshop online that was geared towards queer POC people called Morning Exercise, and like exercise being spelled like exorcism.
Yes.
So kind of that play on words. And yeah, the idea was these, I would like present these movement prompts and movement meditations with the idea of, and they would be at like 10:30 a.m. with the
Yeah.
idea of like waking up and like the first thing you do is like purge the body of like these socialized choreographies. And specifically during COVID, it was like, I think a lot of us were, we didn't really have a lot of variation of embodiments throughout the day because we were just like at home on the computer. Like there wasn't that much range of like the ways that we were like using our bodies. And so like, for example, an exercise is like, if we think of like walking as just a means of getting from point A to point B, right? Like, am I going to walk to the bathroom?
Yeah.
And most of the time we have a very just like singular way of walking. And even amongst each other, there's not that much difference in how we walk. But if we think of walking as just getting from point A to point B, there are actually infinite possibilities that we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so like sometimes I'll do an exercise where we just like, you know, mark a point A and a point B and move back and forth between those two. And each time, like not repeat what, how you got there last time. So mm-hmm. it can be like crawling, like any way of moving, sidestepping, and just like a reminder of all of the possible ways there are to be in our bodies and also to shake things up. And, you know, like why do we always like sit with our legs crossed, especially as people who are socialized as women, mm-hmm. you know, like, and what are, if sitting is just like being comfortable in a chair or something like that, what are all the ways that you can sit? And like, how can you experiment with that, even in public where there is like such an expectation of how to sit imposed onto you?
Yeah.
And if you garner stares, why is that? Why is like the slightest like difference in your posture so transgressive, you know? And like, in what locations does it feel the most transgressive?
Yeah. I started working in an office again recently, like just a few days a week as a designer. Sometimes I'll just like sit in my chair, like one leg up, and kind of like be on my laptop because that's how I'll do it at home.
That's literally how I'm.
Yeah. But then in public spaces, sometimes I'm like, there's this other part of my brain that hasn't been turned on in a while where it's like, you're being perceived by others in a public space. And do they think that's professional? Does that matter? Like, are we around people where like we care about that, you know? And so that's like a little negotiation I have like every single time I do that. And I've decided just to do it actually. And because like, I think sometimes with my work, I'm like, you know what? Actually, I'm confident in what I do. And like, I think people like it and, you know, they can deal with the way I sit.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are also some jobs I perform sometimes where I'm like, actually, I'm not so super confident in like the work I'm performing. Like maybe I'll be a little bit more like copy and paste and like maybe do what other people expect of me until I can break the rules.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That can be more challenging. Yeah. So diving in a little bit deeper, we got into this conversation because you've danced professionally. I think that's an amazing like achievement, even like maybe at a young age, like doing competitions and whatnot. I'm kind of curious to hear like, you know, what maybe got you into dancing with artists and like outside of the realm of school.
You mean like within professional career?
Yeah.
So I mean, like I was saying, I graduated from college and then was like, what, maybe had like, I didn't even have a full-time job ever. I think I did like an arts fellowship right after, in which I did like, I interned at Mocha in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And like, then I came back to LA and I was just like, I don't know what to do. I still want to dance. Like, I think I always wanted to dance, but it just didn't feel realistic or possible to pursue professional dance. But I moved back to LA and I decided to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I just like got a referral from a choreographer to a dance agency and joined the agency, started auditioning. And that's typically pretty difficult if you live in LA and you're just starting out, it's really difficult because similar to what you're saying about your TikToks, like your TikTok job,
yes, you know,
conflicting with your life. Basically, the way that dance auditions go is like you might get an audition, you know, like last night at 8 p.m. For this morning at 9 a.m.
Well,
and so it's really hard for you to like have any sort of like part-time job. Even
you have to be like on call for them, basically.
Yeah, you have to be on call for that, and even booking something, like sometimes I'll audition for something and you won't hear back until literally the night before the shoot. Because sometimes they're going down the list and people aren't available or whatever. And maybe you're like the last person that they're calling at like 9 p.m. the day before. So it's just really hard to that's why a lot of young dancers, they come from like parents who can support them, like who moved to LA, you know, because it's just really challenging to break into if you are also having to think about financial security. But I was fortunate to be able to live with my parents during that time. And I mean, I've lived with my parents for like a while just to like get on my feet. And they live like an hour outside of LA. And so in 2019, I was just going to auditions and living at home and like teaching dance as well.
Teaching dance. Did you
At that time, I was still teaching like at studios, like for kids.
Do you like being a teacher?
I think I do, and I think I did. I think at the moment, there are maybe expectations I have of myself as a facilitator that, like, I want to feel more grounded in myself to be able to teach more, if that makes sense. And I do facilitate sometimes, but these days it gives me a little bit of anxiety. I think just because I want to do it the perfect way or something like that. And I think it comes with, it's definitely something I want to do more and more and more, but I think I'm still like grounding in exactly what it is that I want to teach, if that makes sense, like, and how I want to teach.
Yeah, absolutely. I relate to that. I like being able to share knowledge and impart it. And then also sometimes when it's like a part-time job, there are like other expectations. If you teach with a studio or like there's a format that you need to teach. I've taught like fitness classes from like Yoga Sculpt to Legree, which is very much like a licensed method of teaching, and you cannot break the format. And as like a contractor at a studio, a lot of times it's like you must teach this way because it's part of the brand, and there are actually like maybe consequences and they might take away your license. So they really like crack down on like the structure. But I think like as an artist and someone who just like loves being in my body and then also has had to work office jobs, I've been like thinking about like somatic practices.
It's
like I literally do just have like scar tissue in my back. So one of the things I do these days is like go to the chiropractor and that helps or get like laser treatment. But I did live life for I think maybe like 3 years, even post pandemic, where I was like on the laptop, whether I like had to for work or because like I lost jobs and I was like, well, what else do I do except for apply? I think that sometimes can get me, or I think other people I've observed, like stuck in cycles of like stagnancy. Yeah, and it can be hard to know like where it begins or ends, you know, like
You mean laptop work?
Yeah, like laptop work.
Oh, totally.
And then also like the stagnancy and like, you know, choosing like certain like career paths or whatever.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I was like so stuck on my laptop, and like something that I did for my morning exercise class was like, how do we find like a counterpoint to the sort of like position that we're stuck in all day? Because like also our muscles and like our bodies are kind of deteriorating based on our posture that we're locked into while on the computer. So like doing a body scan, like how do we like embody the opposite to like externalize this like stress we're putting on our bodies? So it's like, okay, like my chin is like kind of jutted forward. Okay, I'll tuck it back. My shoulders are kind of up, so I'll like take them back and down. My wrists are like this. How do I like flex them? So kind of like finding like the counter point of like the position that you are so used to being locked in. And then kind of like also moving between both to like remember that mobility. Because I feel like oftentimes we just like get stuck and it like, and we get disembodied looking at a screen. And we, for me, I'm like, sometimes I'm in pain, you know, like my neck hurts. And somehow I just like cannot get myself to like listen to that pain as a message, as a signal of like, oh, maybe you should shift positions or like maybe you should take a break. It's like, it can be really hard to listen to that voice, you know, and like easy to just like ignore it.
Yeah.
Like to be used to like pushing that pain signal. aside and normalizing it a bit and just continuing in the position you're in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think like our bodies give us really good signals. And then there have been moments in my life where I've been really good at listening. And then other times where, for whatever reason, you know, like medications, like work circumstances, I get really good at like ignoring body signals. And that's led to a lot of problems, actually, where I have to counteract like even more. Yeah, it can be challenging at times. But I like the way you talk about, you know, just counteracting poses. I have this like block on the floor, I'll show you. But I literally got this. I had to lay on the ground and try to put a curve back in my neck because one of the things that I have, like, all these body tools.
Look at mine.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I've seen that one. It's a wave. Do you like the way it feels? This one can be kind of uncomfortable,
I think
actually.
It's too intense for me, but because, well, the injury I have right now is I have a herniated disc in my neck. And so I think this was maybe too intense for me because it was, like, causing, because I had, like, a pinched nerve, which is now doing better, but, like, it meant that my arm would go numb, you know? And whenever I would, like, try this, my arm would, like, really go numb. I think just because I don't have enough space back there right now. So I've like, taken a break of, like, my physical therapist is like, maybe it's, like, too much for you right now. Yeah. But how's yours? How do you like yours?
Honestly, I'm supposed to use this, like, 8 to 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
But when I use it, like, a lot of parts of my body will go numb, like, even the top of my head. Yeah, or my shoulders. I have to, like, roll them back. Sometimes I'll just stare at the ceiling and it's nice, but it's supposed to, I guess, kind of feel uncomfortable because my spine is straight. That's like the main the main issue.
So you're trying to get that curve back.
Yeah,
mine is pretty straight as well. Yeah,
yeah, and it's getting better. And speaking of like sports injuries or dance injuries, I was also a dancer, not probably not as like extreme or intense like growing up. I did like ballet and jazz, but I really wanted like an extracurricular activity when I got to college. So I was a cheerleader literally for one game, and I auditioned like by following this like YouTube dance tutorial to like Beyonce's Girls Run the World. And I always tell myself, like, you know, like if TikTok existed when I was like at the time, I probably would have saved myself a lot of pain because I just wanted to like learn little dances and like do them. But I got on the team and then I ended up getting like in way in over my head, like they wanted to throw me because I'm like 4'11". They had me up there and I was like doing these stunts, and one time during practice they actually dropped me and I landed on my tailbone. So I spent like all freshman year just like the worst lower back pain injury, and it made me sit in a certain way though where like I think it did impact the rest of my back, but it hasn't really started like irking me until lately. So like I did all of like college without doing any PT. I'm like 28. I'm just now doing PT.
And they say that it's from that injury probably that your body just kind of like held on to it.
Unfortunately, I think it's from like a lot of stuff that happened even when I was younger, like age 7, doing like a backflip on the trampoline, like landing on my back and never like, you know, just I was like afraid to like tell my dad because he told me not to like be too dangerous, and I was like, okay, I just don't want it. I don't want to tell anyone. Yeah,
the body keeps the score.
It does. Have you read that whole book? I'm curious because I've read parts of it.
I read it during the pandemic or like 2020 pandemic. It is quite like scientific feeling, and also I think a lot of books have built off of that since. You know, like so many books and so many people who talk about embodiment have like read that as like a baseline. And so for me, it wasn't that interesting of a book because I just feel like I've read so much that has like, I'm sure it was like foundational in a lot of ways, but I think that so many authors have built off of the knowledge from that book and also have like used that to apply it through a lens of like showing justice and something like that, which is more interesting to me than like a more trite scientific book.
Yeah, yeah. I like something that is kind of more like biopsychosocial maybe. Yeah, like social interactions. Yeah. When I was in school, my major was urban studies. And then the concentration was society and social change. But a lot of the foundational like urban studies stuff was like cities, transportation. But then it was also like, how do we like engineer or maybe even like impose social hierarchy at times without even thinking about it? Or we think something is working one way, like broken windows theory, but we're actually causing a lot of harm by imposing like structure in certain ways. But I thought like your library was like such a smorgasbord of like good like arts and social justice. I'm curious, do you have like a favorite book on your shelf at the moment or
Oh,
something you're
well, I'm
reading?
reading this one right now,
Ooh.
which you didn't see because I had brought it with me,
Liberated to the
but I
Bone.
didn't read it.
Yeah.
It's Liberated of the Bone. It's by Susan Raffo. It's from the Emergent Strategy series, which is Adrienne Marie Brown's
Yeah.
like series. And I'm still going through it, but yeah, I think the first chapter is called It Starts with the Land. And she talks about how the like two original wounds of like the United States of America are owning land and owning bodies. And how, like those two, like, yeah, the concept of owning land and the concept of owning bodies has just, like, we hold that in how we are in our own bodies still, because those are the values that this country was founded on.
Yeah.
And it continues to be the values that this country abides by,
Yeah. I think that's like, I don't know what, how. Like the general populace kind of feels about that sentiment lately. But I think lately for me, it's hard to ignore. It becomes like more pervasive, especially as I've lived in different states. You can kind of see that like almost like big box copy and paste template that I was talking about. Like even how we like cut up the land. I lived in Maui for 3 years and there are parts of, I'm in Idaho right now. There are parts of farmland in Idaho that just look very similar to Maui. There's another thing that's related. I had to get a parking permit for like downtown Boise. The same company that hands out the permits for like downtown Boise, where I park now, also handled the parking permits in Maui. So I'm like, wow, it's the same company that like owns these parking lots, and I'm still paying them.
Paying for parking is just
It's the
so
worst.
ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and it does feel like really extractive. Yeah, but also like on another note, I have a lot of hope for change at times, but I think maybe perhaps through like the pitfalls of like there's a limit to everything. And I think, well, I don't want to get too deep into celebrity gossip. I've been talking to my dad about this a lot lately. I'm like, you know, sometimes I feel like celebrity culture is just a part of like the farm industry. At times, like it's, yeah, like I don't know if a lot of people have that takeaway, but if you think about like the world at large, there are a lot of people with power and money actually who choose not to be in the limelight because that's not actually advantageous. So it's like if you think about celebrities, they're kind of a product in a way. And so, like, from a young age, should we also like tell kids like the limelight is to be a celebrity? Like, that is like the pinnacle of success, that's what you want to reach. But I think we've also seen like celebrities, like unfortunately Britney and maybe others who like reach a level of stardom but are like living under conservatorship or something. Yeah. I suppose that can be quite deep and dark, but as people like talk about it and it comes to light and then like there's no option like but to see that, I wonder how many people like even like Gen Alpha or Gen Z like want that, or I think many people don't sometimes. Yeah. What are your takes?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think about this a lot because I think this really actually relates to the dance industry in a lot of ways. Not in the same way of celebritydom, but there is just such a commodification of, or like the dance industry is the commodification of bodies, like dancing bodies. And in this industry, at the same time, dancers are not worth like jack shit, really. Like, kind of bottom of the pyramid, and often, and this is why I'm tired of like backup dancing, often just used almost like as a prop, like to add to the general vibe of the scene,
Yeah.
and oftentimes paid less than a prop costs.
Oh no. Oh
Like I've been
no.
on sets where I'm like,
Yeah.
oh, that costs more than my pay for this entire 2 weeks of rehearsal and these 2 shoot days. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like I think the reason why dance is so powerful and performance art, same thing with performance art, like within the art world, performance art is like at the bottom of the hierarchy. Like it is worth the less, it is worth the least because it is not really collectible in the same way that like a person can buy a painting and like collect it and have it in their collection and show it, right? Like a performance, you can't really own it like that. And that's why I think it is beautiful, because we can't, like it seems to like just escape the grasp of capitalism's urge to own everything because it is ephemeral and it just passes. But at the same time, we're still subject to the dynamics of like what that looks like what capitalizing off of body and performance looks like. And I think the older I get, the more intolerable celebritydom is for me, like just the concept of it. I'm like, and I think it still exists, like contrary to your take, I think people still want it. Like I think that's why TikTok, like I think TikTok is a huge part of that too, like people being able to. I think there are a lot of benefits to TikTok. I think there's also a lot of that, like self, like extracting content out of oneself and like using oneself for gain, you know? And yeah, like FK Twigs is like, I love FK Twigs. Like she has always been my dream artist to dance for.
Yeah.
And her most recent, like she did a performance at Sotheby's called 11, and it was live streamed, and I just like clicked on it because it was on Instagram, clicked on it, and they were promoting it like, okay, like live streaming and selling digital art or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just like a live stream cam of the performance, and it was just kind of like, yeah, like a gallery performance, and you can like pause the video and like buy the still, like
Like
the
as a
exact time code
NFT or
of
what?
the,
Just
yeah,
like,
essentially like that, but like you
yeah.
own just like the image that of, and it's like not like it's like composed in any like particular way, it's just like live
Just the
stream,
still, yeah, the
and you can buy
yeah.
that, and literally the language that they used was like you can own like a unique frame of the performance that only like you own, and like that kind of stuff just feels so obviously like extractive to me, and honestly cringe. I'm like that it's just like so
Yeah.
blatantly like it, I don't know, and that's the kind of stuff that I'm just like
How do you balance that in your mind? Because I struggle with this a lot too. Because, like, I think living in a society where you must use like money in order to like survive and trade it, it's like I understand like why people are doing that.
Totally, yeah.
And then I also think like FK Twigs is someone who's like really spoken up a lot for like artist rights, like maybe even in the
Yeah.
realm of like AI and digital reproduction. So
Totally.
I think it's obvious that she would be someone who is like, yeah, no, like I must get like the value for my
Right.
digital footprint. Yeah. But like, how do you balance that for yourself even? Because like, I don't know what goes on in other people's minds, but.
It's really hard. It's so difficult. It's hard out here. But recently, because this is definitely like something that has been on my mind a lot, I just a couple of days ago, I like made this graph. So the x-axis goes from like misalignment, disembodiment to alignment, embodiment. And then the y-axis goes from like financial insecurity down here to financial security up here, or like thriving up here. And then I started plotting like individual jobs and projects that I've done and like where they fall on the graph. So, and then I would use green for the projects that felt like, okay, this balance feels either like great or it just feels like tolerable to me. And then I used red for the ones that were like, okay, like this, even though this project was up here in financial security. It was also like way out here in misalignment. And that was a red for me. Like, I don't want to put myself through that again, even though the financial security like payoff was high. And I think it's because I'm like trying to orient for like, how do I like prevent myself from moving out of alignment in the future, whilst also being realistic with the fact that like most jobs are going to be not completely like most things that can offer me with money or financial stability are not going to be like 1000% aligned. You know, that's not a realistic expectation to have in this world often. But what is my own like window that feels comfortable for me? And so it's like I found that like most of the things I were like kind of like just like barely aligned and then barely making me money. And those things actually feel really good to me. It's like, okay, like more of those in terms of like just like quick and easy jobs that like give me like a good amount of money. That's not like a lot, but also not like a little. Mm-hmm. And also like I enjoyed them in some degree. They weren't like my passion projects, but they were like enjoyable and I learned something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, actually I would like more of those. Those feel good to me. And then even things that were like super aligned, they were like some things that were like really aligned, but they like didn't really make me any money. They're like kind of like just like on the axis. I'm like, yeah, those feel good too. And even like things that are barely misaligned, like they're just left of the axis, but then they offer me a lot of financial security. I'm like, yes, that works for me. But things that are really misaligned and offer me financial security, like, no, I don't think so. So it's just like, I'm like trying to figure out what my window is that makes me feel like I'm still moving in line with my values and is still supporting me to like be in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say are like some of those values that are like keystone and yeah, like what are keystone values for you?
At least like in terms of, and this, in terms of what I'm looking for in a project to, that makes it feel aligned, which are kind of rare, honestly, but like, I think like time is a big one, like time and slowness and process. I think process is like really important to me, arguably more important than the product. Like I can just like, I love like building relationships during the process and like really taking time to explore and experiment with whatever is being created, although that is like not necessarily ever offered in like LA dance
floor. Does that come down to like the choreographer, like the art direction?
I think it comes down to, honestly, it doesn't happen in the industry because everything is
no time. Space. Yeah,
like everything is like every day is money for somebody, like paying all these people to be in rehearsal, to be in the studio. And so the only time I've actually been in this kind of like long process is I have been doing this project with a performance artist named Castles, and they're from Canada. So they receive Canadian grant funding, which changes things, I think. So we've been working on this project and many iterations of it since, I mean, they've been working on it even longer, but I joined in 2021. And every year we still like come together and do something like another rendition of the project with like the same people, and it feels so good to have like built a relationship with the project and these people for the past 4 years. But that's the longest term project I've done, and I feel like it's not really like common, especially in the US. I think it's common in like Canada and Europe to like have government funding to sustain a project longer term, but not really here, you know.
Yeah, that's super interesting. You're the second person who I've heard of like maybe having some like Canada money. It does actually really change, I think, like the timeline, the expectations of speed. Mm-hmm. And I think that is kind of like one of the biggest problems of being an artist in the US, where like a lot of times they're like, well, when do you need this? The answer is always like yesterday or like ASAP.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then so you're rushing, and I've never made anything really good that I rushed. And that was actually one of the biggest problems I had with my like jobs that's in social media, because the answer was always like yesterday, or like we're probably gonna rush you and we're probably gonna like ask you for like two more versions, you know, in that time. And it sucks because like also as an artist, sometimes you're only as good as like the last thing that you made. But if it was so rushed and botched, it's like, is that really going to get you more work? And then it kind of, yeah, it can be really challenging. One of the things that like I found too is like I've just had to like find ways to like slow it down and not let people rush me. And it's really
Right.
hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because sometimes that doesn't always work out. Like sometimes people will just be like, okay, I can replace you. You're a part. Switching gears a little bit, I wanted to ask you a bit about your travels coming up because you have spent some time outside of the US and you said you did. So you did an internship like right out of school in Shanghai. Yeah. And then you've traveled around Asia like prior to living in LA right now. I'm curious where your favorite places are to travel, like if you've ever considered living abroad, even because it comes in my mind sometimes.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in other places. I studied abroad like 3 times in while I was at UCLA through like or 4 times basically through like various fellowships. And I did my entire senior year in London. And I think I'm at a point where I'm like, I don't know if I have outgrown LA, to be honest. Or I don't know yet. I think part of me is resentful of LA because of just the industries, all the multiple industries that exist here, and that like kind of present a very limiting way of being in this world. You know, like I feel like when you're in LA, I don't know if you feel this, they're just like everyone is trying to be something, and it the pace feels kind of relentless, and you forget that there are other ways of being in the world that are outside of like these limited definitions of success. And so I am like questioning right now, but also there's no place that is necessarily drawing me. Like, I think I am very drawn to the idea that cultural funding in Europe is so much better, but I don't know if I want to live in Europe, you know? And I do really like, I did an Asia tour last year. And it was really nice to travel to a lot of Asian countries I hadn't been to as well. But it would just be like a, yeah, I don't know how I would, it would be a different life, I think, in terms of like even dance career stuff. I think would it be something I would like continue to develop in the same way, like within a global capitalistic framework in a career sense. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure I could develop my practice a lot anywhere. And my relationship to dance could probably even deepen even more outside of a capitalistic context. But yeah, I still am like kind of, I think, have an attachment to the concept of career. You know, as much as I
It's
am
hard
like,
not to. That's how
yeah,
people
as much as I
operate.
have anti-capitalist values and stuff, I still like, I want a career. I want a dance career, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. But I am going to Berlin first to do the performance I did on my Asia tour last year,
Love it.
and then going to Taiwan. I'm staying with family, and I'm also going to get my Taiwanese citizenship
Yay.
because they have a new rule this year that like, or they axed the rule that like you have to stay
For an
without
amount of
leaving.
time.
Yeah, like for like 2 years specifically for kids of Taiwanese citizens. And so now I just have to like go through the application process that takes about 3 weeks. And while I'm there, I'm
That's really
also,
fast, actually, 3 weeks.
I know it's really fast. I'm like, why not? I can't work right now, so why not? And then I am, while I'm there, I also have a performance in Hong Kong for the Movement Festival there. And then I'm also going to Myanmar to perform the same performance from the Asia tour last year.
Okay, so that's awesome. It sounds like you find ways to get a lot of like dance practice in, like even like outside of work. I'm curious, like as like an outsider, like looking in, it seems like you're really good at relationship building. And like I don't know if like you resonate with that. What helps you, I guess, get opportunities for your own like joy and practice?
I mean, I would love to think of myself as good at relationship building, but I think honestly, in the way that I think I am, it's like not professionally related at all.
You're just, you're,
I think I
yeah.
love like I definitely love friendship, and I think that I've been thinking about friendship as mirrors, or not even friendship, but like friendship and community as mirrors. People who like reflect my values, people who see my authentic self and can reflect that back to me. I think that belonging is super important to me, and I can like almost like recognize a mirror when I like come across one, like someone who feels like a mirror. But I guess like the opportunities feel separate to that almost. For the Asia tour that I did last year, it was my first time doing anything like that, like organizing a tour for my own performance. And my partner, who's also my collaborator, did the music for everything. I think that they're super like, they have an idea and they will like get it done, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't really have that energy, actually. I think I'm much more like, go with the flow and see what happens. It's harder for me to find the initiative to like will something into being, but it was really nice to be pushed in that way. Cause I have a lot of like doubts, anxieties. So I definitely like always deal with that, but yeah, like just do it. And we just like cold emailed a bunch of places. And you know, the tour, it's like in underground, like clubs in Asia.
Love it.
Or like experimental clubs in Asia. So
how do you go about finding those places? Like, are you on Google and just like, you know, like stalking people and kind of like, okay, this looks like it's aligned. Like, let's email them.
I mean, it's kind of like a scene in an international scene. So and I've like spent some time in Shanghai and Taiwan. And so like, I know of like quite a few venues already. And then in addition, I've had like friends who've toured. And so like, them connecting me to people, and so just kind of like going from like the anchors that already exist. And then for example, this like Myanmar show that we're doing, the person who runs the club there was at our show in Bangkok last year, and they were trying to bring us out, but it didn't work during that tour because we were already booked. And so then like it's happening now, so a lot of stuff like happens organically from just like, yeah, the thing just like keeps on giving back, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the same thing for my Hong Kong performance. I like responded to the open call of the same like venue that hosted us last year, and they had an open call this year.
Cool. I love it. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts like on like setting up or DIYing your own tour? Because I've heard of like friends who are DJs do that, and I think it kind of works similarly where it's like you put yourself out there, but like, how do you start doing that? Do you kind of just like, you know, well, you have a partner that's like a go-getter too and like really creative. I think that helps. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it helps the tag team too, because it is a lot of like admin, you know?
It
and
really
for
is.
Us, we put like a deck together, just like a one sheet of like who we are and what this performance is, which I don't think most people, well, DJs probably do it just like in terms of like what kind of sets they play, but this is like more of a performance, you know? And then we also like, once we had our photo shoot photos like for promotion, we started like sending those out with like our original email of just like, oh, by the way, like here's, you know, like some photos, like this is the costume I'm wearing.
It's nice to peel the onion a bit, you know, and kind of see like what's going on.
Life is such an onion. But yeah, touring was like, again, it was like the first time I had made such a big commitment to my own work that wasn't initiated by anyone else but me. Like, it wasn't commissioned. It wasn't like anything. And it kind of changed my graph, you know, like, and it's making it harder to go back to things that feel misaligned after like being in a process that like was completely dictated by me and like working with someone I work really well with, and we have like the same values going into every show with like both of us really grounding in like what our intentions are, and like the intentions being like, I think that the club space is so powerful because it's a place where people can really feel into the freedom of their bodies. And so the performance was kind of like the way that the performance worked was I started with like a 20-minute performance in that like sea creature costume, building the energy of the audience, luring them in so that when the DJ set started, they were like super ready to just like dance hard, you know, because of the slow build of the performance that kind of like gets you antsy. And also like the performance being like super feral and like me making all these like crazy faces. And then it went into like almost like an hour DJ set, and then closed with, the last song is like mostly like ocean waves and like a soft melody. with me whispering, like, you are free, like in a mantra-like way over and over again. And I like remove one of the tentacles in my costume, and on it is a stamp that says, you are free. And I go in the crowd, like, and I stamp everyone one at a time, invite them to lay down on the floor. And so at the end, everyone is like laying in a huge cuddle puddle on the floor at the club, which is like such a amazing like exhale after like a night of dancing really hard. And the intention just really being to really have people leave with that embodied memory of freedom. Like, what does freedom feel like in the body? And that's what we were trying to facilitate. And so it felt so good to move from such a place of intention and value and freedom that it becomes just, yeah, let harder to then do stuff that is not so meaningful.
Not in line with the liberation. Wow. Actually, okay, that's amazing. I was going to ask you like how it feels when you're doing the things that you love. And I think you really brought that home. That's one of the things I love about the club too, because it is like a play space of, you know, just like imagining, envisioning, and whatever time you have, feeling it too. And then, yeah, it's really full sensory. That's beautiful. I've never seen a dance performance before a set either, but it makes sense. And I think it, yeah, it's, you're doing a lot. You're acting, you're like bringing in a theme, the stamp. That's super cool. Okay, are you ready for rapid fire?
Yes, mild rapid fire.
Mild rapid fire. It's not even spicy. Okay, cats or dogs?
Dogs. I'm allergic to cats.
EDM or jazz?
Oh, honestly, depends on the mood and the time. I can't answer that one.
You're like, no.
I like some EDM and I hate some EDM, and then jazz is more like neutral for me.
Bass or house music?
Bass.
Night out or night in?
Oh, most of the time night in, honestly.
Same here. Yeah. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Choreo or freestyle?
Freestyle. 100%.
International or domestic flight?
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. I guess international.
Okay, last one. Burritos or tacos?
Depends. Depends on how.
Tell me where you would get a burrito in LA and where you would get a taco.
I love going down the street.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what it's called right now.
I don't either. I know I went to that one place where they do like
the cheap breakfast burritos. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. That one's the hole in the wall in Atwater. Yeah. I never got those. I saw lots of people get them. They look good.
They're so cheap.
They're like, what, $5?
They've raised the prices now, but I think they were like $5 for the breakfast burrito, which was like, where do you get anything that's $5 these days?
I don't know. I got my SSRIs recently, just like this morning.
Yeah?
And those weren't even $5. They were like $8. God. They used to be free, but
I recently had started Wellbutrin, which is an antidepressant. But I'm also like, I'm quitting now. Like after a month, I'm like weaning off.
I was on Wellbutrin for a few months, so I'm familiar. Yeah. It wasn't my favorite, but you know.
Oh, it makes me feel absolutely insane. I think that I'm realizing now that I'm weaning off and I'm feeling so much better and so much more like myself. I was like, oh, I was kind of poisoning myself.
I worked for someone too who was on it for a bit, I think like after giving birth, and she was not focused, and I think she stopped it too. But yeah, I was like, I did not feel well.
I have not felt well for the past month, and I'm like finally starting to feel like more well, and I think it's because I'm quitting.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what, not rapid fire, but like, what is like wellness look like to you these days? Like what's your like wellness goals? Because I'm all about wellness right now. Like just replenish the body.
I think something I have realized through this, I mean, this injury has been very spiritual for me. I'm like recognizing that injuries are such powerful messages. You know, it's your body's way of telling you, like, oh, this, what you have been doing is no longer sustainable. And I was in, like, pretty extreme pain. And I started resting in the last week of June. And it was a couple of weeks ago where I was like at the beach in the morning. I had felt called to move, and I was moving, and it was feeling really easy and effortless, which it hasn't been because I've been in pain. And I had this like passing thought of like, oh, I wonder, I think maybe part of me is attached to this injury. And at that point, it was like week 10 already of my healing. And basically, like my first week of rest, my pain improved like dramatically just by virtue of like not doing a 2-hour show every night. But then between weeks 2 and 10, my healing kind of plateaued. Like I was kind of at the same place with like neck pain and arm numbness. But yeah, so I had this realization like maybe I'm attached to this injury because if I were to heal, it would kind of allow me to go back to the way things were with like how I was working as a dancer, which was proving to be so misaligned in a way that I could no longer ignore. And so then I think I was like, oh, maybe I'm attached to this limbo space because I've just been in this like depressive limbo space of like, okay, well, I'm resting right now. I have no idea what comes next, but also I'm like not ready to let go of what things were, how things were, because I know it, you know, it's, and I'm not ready to jump fully into the unknown yet because I'm like, okay, what does it look like for me to, if I'm going to set these boundaries around taking care of my body as a professional dancer, what does that mean for me? Like, what does that mean for like how dance will be in my life and how I will sustain myself financially? And so I had that passing thought, journaled about it, forgot about it. And then a week later, because I've been like keeping track of my pain every day on like a chart, you know, just to see. And I realized that after that day, my pain had lifted and I had been experiencing these pain-free days. And since then, it was like 2 weeks. I'm having a flare-up now again, but there were like 2 weeks I had of just like my arm numbness has gone away. And so that psychosomatic connection is really interesting to me. And I guess that's what I am interested in right now is like not to bypass the fact that like, yes, I do have a hurt, like literally I have an
Physically
MRI
and
and an X-ray
injury,
that is like, I have a herniated disc. It's not just in my mind, you know, but also like that pain is a signal that your brain is sending you know, and
it's asking you to like pay attention to it. And then you gave it some attention and it changed in a way.
exactly. It's
So,
so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is
So,
fascinating.
yeah. And then also, like, because I've been tracking my pain and I've also been tracking like my anxiety and mood. And because I've been in this process of like just battling insurance, various insurance companies, and it's been really just terrible, you know. And I noticed that when I am feeling my more of a nervous system dysregulation, my pain also just like shoots up. And it's also making me realize that my nervous system has just been like, I think I am constantly, I've been in fight or flight, like way more than I should be, you know, like all my life. And so really curious about, and also overwhelmed by what it looks like to reprogram those fire alarms in my brain that go off and activate my fight or flight when there's actually, when that's not necessary, you know, when it's something little that does not require me to go into survival mode.
Yeah, that's so good.
It's a, it's,
It's the little things though, I think that help bring awareness and change it. It's scary. I feel like we're on a similar journey and path right now because I'm freaking scared a lot of the times. So I'm like, comfort is starting to get uncomfortable for me because I'm noticing it's not working for my body. I'm getting older. There is something about like getting closer to 30 where like I don't really care about aging, but like noticing my body change and like recognizing that like I want to live like a good life. I'm like, what does that look like, you know? Yeah, because that's always been something for me where I'm like, I get to experience being in my body, no one else does. Like, I want that to be a good experience. So. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I love having you. You're welcome back anytime. Yeah. And then I'll go
Thank you
ahead.
so much, Jules. It's
Yeah.
been so nice to chat with you. And I feel very like present right now. It's a nice way to start the day.
Good. I am glad that I gave you that feeling. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Jazz for being on the podcast this week, and thank you to all the listeners who tuned in today. I just wanted to remind you that my name is Jules. I make key art for musicians, podcasters, writers, and event specialists. If you would like to check out my key art services, you can go to juliaespero.me. That's juliaespero.me. This month, I'm continuing to interview artists who are DIYing their art journeys, their careers. And so we'll continue to do more interviews. And thank you so much for joining the pool party. I will see you next time.